A four-day truce broken just hours after it was put in place. The Syrian government says it's ready for the political and peaceful resolution of the crisis, as far as it does not include foreign intervention. The UN Arab League envoy insists his peace efforts may still prove successful. So what is hindering the option of a ceasefire? And is Syria set to face a protracted conflict that sooner or later could spill out of its borders? I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is News Analysis.
More blasts hit Syria on the last day of a supposed truce, which was expected to last 4 days. The ceasefire was introduced by the UN Arab League envoy Lakhdar Brahimi on the occasion of the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Adha. It was meant to halt hostilities and alleviate the suffering of civilians caught in the middle of fire. But only after a few hours after the ceasefire came into effect, gun battles erupted in different areas. The fighting was followed by several bomb blasts which left dozens of civilians dead and scores more wounded. Since its inception, some foreign-backed armed groups did their best to undermine the truce. Jabhat al-Nusra, an al-Qaeda-affiliated group behind the recent blasts in the country, rejected it outright. Many figures with Turkish-based opposition also did not take the truce seriously and even accused the international community of backing President Bashar al-Assad.
They have, for the past 20 months, always sided with Bashar al-Assad unfairly and justice. There was no ceasefire.
After the new outbreak of hostilities, the Syrian army said it still respects the truce but reserves the right to respond to any attack. But what's the reason behind the collapse of the ceasefire? One answer could be that other external actors involved in the conflict and the Syrian government is not simply fighting a single enemy.
Fighting a destabilization campaign which is being led by the U.S. Zionist axis of evil, as we might term them, with support from Saudi Arabia and, unfortunately, Turkey, which had looked like it was going to be an honest player in the Middle East just a year ago.
Before introducing his initiative, Brahimi had toured the region to garner as much support as he could. The support he likely did not receive because he's now headed to Russia and later to China. Brahimi says the outbreak of hostilities have not discouraged him because
Syria is very important because the people of Syria deserve our support and our interest. So we shall continue to work as hard as we possibly can, and we in cooperation with everybody inside Syria and outside of Syria to bring the level of violence down.
It is not clear whether he can get what he's after, at least not until there are parties bent on continuing their dirty business in Syria. It seems Brahimi first needs to convince them to stop military and ideological support for the insurgents in Syria.
Well, joining me now live from London is founder of Syrian Youth in Britain and a member of the Syrian Social Club, Mr. Danny Mackey. I'd also like to introduce our guest in Beirut, Mr. Osman Bakash from the Hizbut Tahrir Party, and also with us via Skype from Beirut, senior associate at St. Anthony's College, Oxford University, Sharmeen Narwani. Thank you very much for being with us. My first question to our guest in London, Mr. Mackey. Now, we saw there a ceasefire put in place, an agreement made, but just hours after it was put in place, it was broken. What is hindering that option, the option of at least even a temporary ceasefire, Mr. Mackey?
Good evening. I think the biggest problem that Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi faces when dealing with the Syrian crisis is that he's not dealing with two sides which are on the same playing field. He deals with one side, which is the state, which is a legitimate entity, which has its own sovereignty, which has a legitimate right to defend its own territorial integrity. However, when dealing with the opposition, he's dealing with an opposition which is disunited, which is not necessarily all in Syria. He's dealing with radical groups, possibly Islamists, who have no intention of ceasing fire, who have no intention of stopping hostilities, most, in fact, of which seek to continue the crisis and prolong the crisis, as manifested with the recent car explosions in Hajar al-Aswad today, which killed up to 15 innocent individuals, and in Jaramana this morning, which killed up to 7 individuals, including one child. Also manifested last week in the explosion in Bab Touma. What we see a new phase of the Syrian crisis, the phase which is a war of terror. The opposition have resorted to using terrorist attacks as a conduit for continuing the crisis. This is the biggest problem that Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi faces. Mm. Although we all support a peaceful solution, a solution which recognizes Syria's aspirations for a better life, a solution which recognizes Syria's sovereignty as a state in the Middle East, we also need to comprehend the fact that there is a phase of indefensible terrorism. This terrorism would not be allowed in the West, and it should not be allowed in Syria. And this terrorism is the biggest hindrance of any initiatives to stop the Syrian crisis. And its continuation in itself hinders and inhibits any possible peaceful solution for the Syrian crisis.
So basically you're saying, Mr. Mackey, that the problem here is a disunited opposition, in your words, that is not interested in a ceasefire. I'd just like to go ahead with this question with Mr. Bakosh, who's with us from Beirut. One Syrian military source, Mr. Bakosh, was saying, and I'm quoting here, that there will be no Eid ceasefire unless the international community can convince us, the military that is, that there would be a freeze in place, which means no fighter on either side could move and take advantage of the calm, because he was saying trust is the big problem for all of us here. Who will guarantee a ceasefire?
Well, allow me to put things in proper perspective. This the whole idea of ceasefire or truce comes as another element in the political maneuvering currently promoted by Mr. Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi. Let's not forget that Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi, at the end of the day, he is only executing the agenda agreed by the American President Obama and the Russian President Putin when they met in Mexico. That agreement translated into Geneva Accord at the end of last June. So the American, basically, they are occupied now with the election. And Mr. Obama still didn't indicate which way to go on regarding the Syrian crisis. So he's using Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi, like Kofi Annan before, simply to buy time. Meanwhile, the ruthless killing machine of the Syrian regime is ongoing. And conveniently, this car bombing to raise a flag of the so-called war on terror. We had seen, whether in Libya, in Egypt, and elsewhere, all Gaddafi had raised the banner that it's either me or terror. Mubarak in Egypt raised the banner or the slogan, either me or Islamic terror. And now the Syrian intelligence conduct this various car bombing to justify that it's war on terror. And this is the same slogan used by the American after 9/11. So let's not forget that this whole revolution started from day one being peaceful. The children who took the streets in Dar'a, they were peaceful, and their parents who protested against their torture were peaceful. The large rally who took down to the streets in Hama last year, up to 450,000 peaceful protesters, there wasn't single slap or nothing. So the people had wanted a peaceful revolution. It was the Syrian regime who forced the militarization of this conflict to exactly justify that we are being defensive in the so-called war on terror.
Let's bring in Sharmeen Narwani on this as well. Ms. Narwani, some people have been saying that those insurgents who are right now in Syria, and they include, they say, Al-Qaeda and North African and Persian Gulf militants, will use opportunities like a ceasefire to rebuild their ranks, to prolong the chaos and the terror. Now, concerning what we saw happen in Damascus today, the two bombing explosions, is that what's actually happened?
Yes, we've had some technical difficulties with me, so excuse me if I'm repeating what some of the other guests have said. I think there has been speculation that any ceasefire will benefit one side or the other. Let me be clear. There have been two such attempts in the past for ceasefires. One was when the Arab League monitors went in December and January, and during their observations, they in their report in January, they clearly concluded that the Syrian army participated fully. The Syrian government made mistakes, but when put on notice, they immediately rectified them. That in fact, the Arab League monitors viewed an escalation of activities from gunmen, as they call them at that time. It was the first time we'd seen an official source talk about gunmen. Fast forward to April, when the ceasefire went into effect. And the amazing thing that happened in that ceasefire that everyone was watching so carefully and was well orchestrated was that in May, McClatchy News said it was the month where you had the largest number of Syrian army soldiers killed. That in this month, it was the first time army kills surpassed civilian kills. So in fact, we're seeing, that was the second time we'd seen rebel groups use the ceasefire. And we're not just, this is not just guesswork. This is empirical evidence now. With observation of first the Arab League monitors, then the UN monitors, we're seeing that the rebels have used the ceasefire to immediately escalate activities against the Syrian army and other and other security forces in the country. But I just want to say one thing: this so-called ceasefire that Brahimi, you know, helped put together over the aid weekend isn't like the others. This was more a sentimental ceasefire. Let's all just stop killing for a long weekend in honor of the Eid al-Adha. It's not at all anything like the other two that actually had observers and mechanisms on the ground to help orchestrate and mediate.
Right. Thank you very much, Ms. Narwani. Let's just put this question back to our guest in London, Mr. Mackey. When we are referring to the truce there, as our guest, Ms. Narwani, was just telling us, the Syrian government at this time and the previous times as well had been saying that those ceasefire attempts were initially broken by the insurgents or by the gunmen. At the same time, our guest in Beirut was telling us earlier that these political options are not going to work. So do you think right now that efforts for a peaceful solution are no longer going to work, and that only a military option is going to work here, or there is still hope for peace?
Oh no, of course. The main focus for the Syria crisis now has to be on a peaceful solution. A peaceful solution is the only solution. A military solution is rejected, and this is something which will not help the Syrian people. In fact, this is something which will make the crisis far more complicated than it already is. The most important and significant concept is to have a mechanism, a policy for peace, a policy for negotiations, a policy for dialogue, to have a way in which we can stop the violence in a civilized way, to get both sides onto one negotiating table, and to work to solve the potential solutions that we and to work to give potential solutions to this ongoing problem. However, the issue of terrorism is that it undermines any peaceful process, it undermines the ceasefire, it undermines all the positive actions which Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi has taken. The biggest problem is when you side with the Syrian crisis, you're dealing with a state. The other side, there is no state. It's a group of, some are Western-backed, some have different interests, some are Islamist fighters. Who do you really talk to? Where do you go to negotiate? Right. Do you go to Qatar? Do you go to Saudi Arabia? We understand the armed opposition has a very solid base in Turkey. Also, Qatar finances the armed opposition. These are the states which really need to be pressured to stop funding and arming the free Syrian army in order to find a peaceful solution. Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi said to the United Nations Security Council a few weeks ago that he has confirmed reports of up to 5,000 foreign fighters in Syria. I mean, this number is unprecedented. Surely these 5,000 armed fighters who are not Syrian,
right,
they have no influence, they have no interest in a ceasefire.
Right, something interesting that you mentioned there, Mr. Mackey, is the issue of foreign intervention. What is the opposition when we are speaking about the opposition? In Beirut now, Mr. Bakash, the thing is that those who are for a political option for Syria are saying that right now the situation that we're looking at the ground in Syria is that we've got, again, various parts of the opposition. We've got foreign insurgents fighting there, according to the reports, according to the UN reports as well. And we've got Al-Akhdar Ibrahimi himself saying earlier on that it's the Syrian people themselves who should be progressing with reforms in the country. At the current situation, do you think that going ahead with the military option is going to lead to foreign intervention and would actually threaten the national sovereignty of Syria?
Well, let me remind here that I'm speaking on behalf of Hizb al-Tahrir, which is a liberation party. And by liberation, we mean to liberate our nations from the colonial order imposed by Europe yesterday and maintained by America today. Now, this military option was imposed by the Syrian regime. When it comes to foreign intervention, whether it is through Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkey, Egypt, or Europe, it's obvious and clear. These states these players, they intervene in the Syrian affair to pursue a specific agenda. The Saudi Arabia and Qatar, they are against the Syrian regime. We see Iran fully supporting the Syrian regime. Turkey took a stand against Bashar Assad early on. Later on, now recently, there are talk when Turkish president met with the Iranian president in Azerbaijan, and they both agreed that Bashar Assad should stay in power. And this agreement was also equally endorsed by the Egyptian president, Mr. Mohamed Morsi, all of which under the umbrella of the American approval. So the foreign intervention, we are against it totally in whatever form or shape it takes.
Right.
We call upon the Muslims or the nation to break the colonial order manifested in the Sykes-Picot Agreement. We call for true liberation without seeking any foreign support from whether Europe or America or any other foreign powers. And this includes Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and so on.
Right.
We call upon self-liberation, relying on our forces. At the same time, we are against bloodshed. We are against internal civil strife. We call upon the Syrian army to side beside the people and to defend the people, not to crush them and to stop this ongoing genocide. The mission of the armed
forces is to defend the nation. You're saying, Mr. Bakosh, that you're against foreign intervention. Now, let's go back to Ms. Marwani now on this. Ms. Marwani, the thing is, Lakhdar Brahimi himself was implying, as well as the UN chief earlier on and various international officials, that when we're speaking about a ceasefire, when we're speaking about a resolution, what needs to be stopped is the supply of arms, the assistance that these insurgents are receiving from countries which were mentioned here, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, even the United States, Russia, saying that very clearly that the US is responsible. But is that going to happen? And if it's not going to happen, does it mean that the peace efforts by Lakhdar Brahimi are not going to get anywhere?
Well, first of all, let's put Ebrahimi in context. He's, as far as I'm concerned, a placeholder. He's not going to do any major kind of shuttle diplomacy, these trips aside. He has no... You know, when he was in Lebanon recently, I heard from people who met with him that the guy had nothing to say. He had nothing on the table, nothing new to offer. I think the Russians are absolutely correct that it is incumbent upon the nations that have influence with the various parties that are armed to mediate and ensure that they do lay down their arms in the event of a ceasefire or when there's attempts at political solution. In fact, the Russians have said that it was fully their expectation that after Geneva that the FECUS countries, France, UK, and US, had every intention of doing so, and in fact, they have not. And even if they're not the actual conduits for arms, they are allied with the parties that are, and they have something they can do about it, and that's, you know, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. Unless the rebels put down arms, every opportunity for a ceasefire, for moving towards a political solution, will be unnecessarily wasted, and that's the way forward. So it really is right now. You know, it's important that the media also participates in changing these narratives. We keep getting distracted by, you know, supposedly Hezbollah in Syria and Iranian Revolutionary Guards are now Iraqi Shia in Syria, which are the wrong stories. The stories are, you know, if you want to stop civilian deaths, if you want to stop the carnage, people have to put down their arms. And the ones using, you know, the ones that we cannot control are on the opposition side. And unless these countries do not take immediate measures to do that, they should be sanctioned.
Right. Mr. Maki, we know now that Brahimi, after his regional tour of Syria and its neighbors, is now in Russia. He's planning to go to China. Do you think that the solution right now for Syria could or should include countries like, for instance, Iran, Russia, China, and other countries that are being spoken of?
Of course, when searching for a palpable political solution, there needs to be a synergy. This synergy has to involve numerous parties and factors and actors and states. I would just like to respond to Osama on one point, is that Iran, Russia and China, they support a political solution in Syria. They support non-intervention. They are against Western-backed regime change. Iran's role in the Syria crisis is as a potential player which can have a role in solving the crisis, not continuing it. Iran support the Syrian population, as do Russia and as do China. This is a very evident issue. But in terms of these particular states, especially Russia and China, and especially Iran, with its influence in the Middle East, need to be part of the solution. They need to be part of the mechanism which could work towards solving the Syria crisis. And they have a very influential role in the region. But also, one issue is that we have a regional struggle. What we see a geopolitical hall of mirrors. We have different states based on ideological levels, political levels. There's different levels in the Syria crisis. You have an ideological struggle between political Islam, which is backed by the West, as in support for groups such as Jabhat al-Nusra.
Ms. Maki, if I could just stop you there, if I may, because the point that you're raising is opening a new topic. And because we're running out of time, I'd just like to, again, touch on the issue that we raised before with our guests in Beirut before we do run out of time. Mr. Bakash, the recent bombings in Damascus, basically, have been rather said that are being carried out by terrorists. And these terrorists include various sources of saying, Al-Qaeda members, etc., as well as the other insurgents that are in Syria. The question is, who is responsible for allowing these terrorists to enter into the conflict in Syria, and how can these terrorists be fought to be forced out of the country? Now, isn't that the job of the Syrian army?
The first fabricator and inventor of terrorism is the USA, United States of America. Second, next to it is the Syrian regime. Let's not forget the Syrian ambassador to Iraq, who defected from Iraq, from Iraqi Baghdad, capital Baghdad. He himself admitted after his defection that he used to facilitate the bringing in of so-called terrorists from Syria to Iraq to do car bombing and what have you. The Syrian regime has a long history in infiltrating and manipulating these various so-called Qaeda subgroups and so on. So. This is a slogan they use, even supported by the American. I remember the first car explosion which happened in Damascus. The next day, the American defense minister, Panetta Begbin, he said, this is a fingerprint of Qaeda.
Because we've run out of time, and I'd just like to let Ms. Narwani give her concluding remarks as well. Ms. Narwani, what do you think should be done about the threat of Al-Qaeda in Syria?
I think, first of all, neighboring countries have to participate in border control in a very serious way. The same kind of Western and international systems that have been provided to the rebels, reconnaissance and, spying via satellite, communication equipment, those things have to be made available and utilized to make the borders less porous. Around Syria, I mean, these are, the essentials. There are people far more capable than me to tell you exactly what needs to be done, but certainly that's step number one. And secondly, the assistance, the material assistance that's going to these groups who are not Al-Qaeda necessarily, but are sympathetic to the ideals of Al-Qaeda, should stop immediately. And I do believe at this point we have to change the narrative and talk about sanctioning countries that are inflaming the crisis, because they are directly now responsible for the escalation of the humanitarian element of this crisis in Syria.
Thank you very much, Sharmeen Narwani, Senior Associate at St. Anthony's College, Oxford University. A big thank you as well to our guest in Beirut from Hizb Tahrir Party, Mr. Osman Bakash, and founder of Syrian Youth in Britain and member of the Syrian Social Club, Danny Maki in London. Thank you very much for being on another edition of News Analysis. From me, Homa Lezgi, it's goodbye.